Everybody's checked in and both sides are ready, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, then would you call the case, please?
The court will now call State of Texas versus Stephen Brown and Ash. And the district court, Mr. Seth Johnson to argue for the appellate, Mr. John Griffin to argue for the appellate.
All right, Seth.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The trial court abused its discretion in the omission and exclusion of three separate categories of evidence. Each separately constituted reversible error. First, the Morales were allowed to introduce a separate higher compensation option, which they termed the displaced valuation. The Morales' first compensation option was for approximately $1.06 million. This was based on their appraiser, David Bolton's date of take appraisal. The Morales' second compensation option was for approximately $1.2 million, which they termed the displaced valuation. This was based on a May 2013 appraisal, which was done prior to the date of take. This appraisal assumes that the property will no longer function and all of its improvements will be razed to the ground. Both Kim Morales and David Bolton testified to this valuation, Bolton as an expert appraisal witness, Kim Morales under the property owner rule. Both of their testimony is held to expert testimony standards under Texas law. However, neither offer more than their own say-so in support of the introduction of this displaced valuation. First, as a threshold issue, neither Kim Morales nor David Bolton ever testify that the property will no longer continue to function, which is the assumption that the displaced valuation is premised on. And even if they had, this would be merely a conclusion without factual support. In looking to Kim Morales' testimony first, the fact that the displaced valuation came from an appraisal does not support its introduction. An appraisal is merely one of the type of documents that a property owner may rely on. However, meeting this entry-level requirement does not make any the reliance on any specific appraisal substantiated. And here, Kim Morales never provides any factual support linking the displaced valuation to the property's market value on the date of take. In fact, the Morales introduced reconfiguration plans from their hired land planner, Carson, which shows the property can continue to function. Kim Morales does identify problems she believes are created by the state's acquisition. However, the Carson reconfiguration plans address each problem that Kim Morales identifies and provides a solution.
And your position is there was proper objection?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the Morales point to purported waivers of no objection to the displaced valuation, as well as the introduction of the summary of the report. If you look at the trial court's orders, there was 4 days of pretrial. On the second day of trial, the court ruled that the displaced valuation was admissible. The court further put that specifically in a written order denying the state's motions. So it's clear that this issue was contested before the trial court, and the state properly relied on the trial court's early rulings. Further, Kim Morales herself actively participated in the development of the Carson plans. Carson testified that conservatively, over the last 3 years, he looked at 100 different plans with her. Again, she never states the property will no longer function, just that it has reduced functionality or that it won't function the same as it did before. However, while the solutions that the Carson plans provide may result in reduced functionality, Bolton includes a damage component in his $1.6 million valuation for this reduced functionality, roughly $534,000 to implement the Carson plans and $334,000 for the reduced functionality itself, which includes the loss of parking, loss of storage, the throat depth on the new driveway, and the uncertainty of what cure plan will be implemented. Accordingly, Kim Morales provides no support for the displaced valuation. Neither does David Bolton. His direct testimony just states the assumption that it's based on, that the property will no longer function, and the buildings will have to be razed to the ground. On cross, he does testify that uncertainty would support the displaced valuation. However, the problem with this testimony is that he already includes this uncertainty as part of his lower date of take valuation. He's quantified it as part of the $364,000 damage number, and you can't use that same quantified uncertainty to support two separate valuation options. That would make each equally as speculative. In fact, the only thing that would support the displaced valuation here would be the certainty that the property would no longer function and you would have to come in and demolish all the buildings.
You can't present alternative possibilities to the jury?
Well, Your Honor, the alternative possibilities are the two different reconfiguration plans.
Right.
Not a plan which assumes that you're going to come in with a wrecking ball and a bulldozer and knock all the buildings to the ground. What Bolton has done is he said, there may be a possibility for that. That's what the uncertainty is. I've included that as part of my damages number. That's here the worst case scenario. For example, the default on a bond.
Mm-hmm.
But that's already, that risk to a willing buyer and willing seller has already been quantified. And that's really, if you look at the 30,000 foot overview of this case, you've got the state coming along this highway acquiring land. And we have to pay the property owner just compensation for that. The acquisition area here clips part of a covered carport on the Morales property. And the issue
before... Just a little strip.
Just one little strip. And the issue before the jury is, what does the state have to pay for that? And that's measured with this hypothetical willing buyer and willing seller.
But it also has to do with the effect on the property as a whole. If it destroys the legitimate use of the land, or if there are major changes that have to be made, that...
That's correct, Your Honor. Both parties, however, introduced cure plans which showed the property could continue to function. And so while you can introduce alternate plans, there has to be some basis for introducing that alternate plan. And here there's no basis when you have two Carson reconfiguration plans that show the property will continue to function to come in and demolish the whole property. And the introduction of this displaced valuation was reversible error. The state must show that it probably caused a rendition of an improper judgment. What it allowed here was for the Morales to provide a higher unsubstantiated anchor point, which made their date of take valuation seem more reasonable as an intermediate value. Further, it was crucial to a key issue in the case. In fact, in eminent domain actions, there's only one issue before the jury, which is the market value of the property. It was not duplicative of any other properly admitted evidence, as it was a higher valuation. And the evidence was not so one-sided that it did not have an effect. Here, the jury did not return a unanimous verdict. It was 10-2, and both parties presented competing expert testimony. The next area where the trial court abused its discretion was the admission of evidence related to the Morales displacee classification under TxDOT's Relocation Assistance and Benefits Program. Condemnation actions are in-rem proceedings, and only damage to property, not people, is compensable in a condemnation action. The displacee classification is a classification of persons, not property. It originates in the Texas Administrative Code in a section entitled Relocation Assistance and Benefits. These relocation benefits are a supplemental measure of compensation added by the Texas legislature to the constitutional compensation available under Article 17. They're established by federal rule to which Texas law conforms. Initially, the Morales were classified as a displaced solely based on the state's appraiser, Jennifer Ayers' appraisal, which concluded the property would no longer function. After she had the benefit of Roland O'Connor, the state's land planner's land plans, she revised this classification, which was later revoked. The Morales never appealed administratively the revocation of their displacee classification. And at the time of trial, they were no longer displacees, as they're not being required to move from the property. Further, the displacee classification was not relevant to any issue before the jury. It does not make any future use of the property more or less likely. And market value contemplates the value to a disinterested third party, a willing buyer, willing seller. A willing buyer would not be interested in how TxDOT classified the Morales under a separate administrative program. Nor does it disprove the state's theory of the case. The state's relocation agents are not appraisers or land planners. They were not qualified to, nor did they have an opinion on the property's use or functionality. And the record is clear, and I don't believe the Morales contest this, that the displacing classification was both triggered and revoked solely based on the appraisals of Jennifer Ayers. However, what the Morales were able to do was make this a central theme of the trial in an attempt to prejudice the jury against the state. And the introduction of this highly prejudicial evidence probably caused the rendition of an improper judgment. The Morales were able to shift the focus of the trial from the harm to the harm that the Morales suffered themselves as opposed to the market value of the property. They were able to introduce testimony that the Morales were extremely upset, testimony referencing the fact that the Morales would have to move. testimony from TxDOT's relocation agents regarding other properties that were classified as displaced, and letters from the relocation process referencing the effect the condemnation would have on the Morales business and its employees, in addition to notices to vacate. They were able to prejudice the jury by falsely asserting that TxDOT never treated the Morales as displaced or made them a compensation offer consistent with TxDOT's belief they were displaced, arguing that a jury award in favor of the state would not be treating the Morales in the same way that the state told them they would be from the very beginning, introducing testimony regarding the emotional impact the displacee classification had on the Morales, and linking this displacee classification to a separate higher compensation option. In looking at harmful error, courts look to the efforts made by counsel to emphasize the erroneous evidence, and a party's insistence on introducing inadmissible testimony indicates how important he thought it was to the case. Here, the only conclusion that can be drawn is the Morales thought the displacee evidence was extremely important to their case. They emphasized it from opening statement to closing. In fact, the Morales trial counsel stated during argument that by the third day of trial, the word displacee had been used conservatively 100 times. If this evidence is now harmless, then why did the Morales insist on emphasizing it from start to finish? And here, the sheer volume of the displacee evidence cannot be ignored, and it tainted the trial, resulting in harmful error. Finally, the trial court erred in excluding the testimony of the state's witnesses, Robert Brown and Jason Lahmer. Both were members of the town staff. Robert Brown was a town attorney, and Jason Lahmer was a town engineer and director of developmental services. He was also the boss of Dusty McAfee, who the Morales called as a witness. Brown and Lahmer would have testified to the application of the town's ordinances, including four specific examples where other businesses had received variances under the town's ordinances. This testimony was proper as rebuttal evidence to the false impression created by the testimony from the McAfee and the presentation of the town staff's recommendations on the Morales exhibits for the Carson reconfiguration plans. The Carson Cure plans included multiple items and costs that were added on as on the basis of the town's recommendations. For example, a connection to a city sewer when the property had a septic system that wasn't affected by the state's acquisition. McAfee, a town staff witness for the Morales, created a false impression by testifying that the Carson plans represented the bare minimum necessary per the staff's understanding of the ordinances. The state's cure plan did not include this wish list from the town and contended many of these items were not related to the acquisition. The town of Little Elms ordinances allow for a waiver of variance for nonconforming properties affected by eminent domain actions. And under these variances, as long as there's not a health or safety issue, the town will not require a landowner to pay more than it received from the state in the condemnation action. The testimony from Brown and Lahmer would have rebutted the false impression created by McAfee's testimony that the town staff's recommendations to the Carson plans were the bare minimum required, and it would show the other side of the uncertainty coin, that it's equally likely the town would not require anything additional from the Morales. This testimony was also proper as a factor that a willing buyer would consider in evaluating the uncertainty surrounding the property. The fact that other properties in the area had received variances is something a willing buyer would take into account. An analogous situation is the Texas Supreme Court's decision in Hedden versus Delphi Gas Pipeline Company. There, the court was in a condemnation case for a pipeline. The court was evaluating whether fear in the minds of the buying public that the pipeline would rupture was relevant to proof of damages. The court held that in evaluating market value, the proof of these other instances of similar pipeline ruptures would be directly relevant and admissible to the damages. When a trial court's exclusion of evidence creates a false impression, reviewing courts have concluded that exclusion is harmful. In closing, the Morales counsel emphasized McAfee's testimony that the Carson plans were the bare minimum. They were allowed to present exhibits with all the town staff's recommendations, and this testimony that this was the bare minimum required likely caused the jury to categorically reject the testimony from the state's witnesses, which did not include the town staff recommendations. For these reasons, we ask that you reverse the judgment of the trial court.
Thank you. Don?
Yes, Judge.
Good morning. May it please the court. Donnie Griffin on behalf of the property owners Stephen and Kim Morrell. The summation of the state's appeal in this case can be succinctly stated as follows. The state complains about a result that never happened. The state asks this court to overturn a jury award of $1,064,000 when the state does not challenge there is ample evidence in the record to support that award amount. Instead, what the state asks this court to do is to find that Judge Bonnie Roberson improperly admitted evidence into the record, primarily on the issue of displacement and displaced valuation, and because that evidence was improperly admitted, the jury probably rendered an award it otherwise would not have done so. But there's a huge problem with the state's argument. The jury,
the displacement value evidence was improperly admitted?
I think it was properly admitted, and I will address the merits of why shortly.
I understood you to say improperly.
No.
So you're just stating your position.
The state says it was improperly admitted. I strongly disagree and will tell you why.
But you're going to tell us first why there was enough evidence without it to support the verdict?
Absolutely correct.
All right. Let's hear it.
Judge, the state has to engage in ignoring what the jury actually did. The jury returned to the exact dollar amount, the compensation number that was testified to by the property owner's appraisal expert, David Bolton, for, and I want to be real clear, for the non-displaced value of the property. The jury did not return the $1.262 million number the state complains of. The jury did not return an award amount somewhere between the $1,064,000 and the $1.262 million number. Instead, the jury returned the exact dollar figure of Bolton's testimony on non-displaced valuation. And here's the position it puts the state in. The state has to jump into a deep pool of speculation to make its argument. And here's how it has to speculate. The state has to speculate that even though there's ample evidence in the record that supports the $1.064 million award, even though the jury did not return that award amount, that somehow, because evidence was admitted of a displaced valuation, that probably caused the jury to award the $1.064 million. You can't get there based upon the record and the actual jury award in this case, because the clearest evidence of what the jury relied upon is the award. They awarded the very dollar amount of the non-displaced value. Judge Dauphineau, I'm going to jump. I was going to do the standard of review, but the state agrees. It's an abuse of discretion standard. Right, and it's a two-pronged test. The state must show that Judge Roberson acted without any guiding rules or principles in the admission of the complained of evidence. And even if it meets that burden, and I don't believe the state does, but even if the state meets that burden, it must show the introduction of that evidence probably caused a result, the award, that the jury otherwise would not have reached. The state's never going to be able to satisfy that second prong because of what the jury actually did. Merits. Let's get to the merits of the displaced valuation. The state makes a statement in its brief, and again in oral argument, that I think is just flatly contradicted by the record. The state's position is that there was no relevancy for the displaced valuation or the state's classification of the Morales as displaced. In every single
state's characterization of the Morales as displaced?
Yes, ma'am. TxDOT.
TxDOT.
Okay. TxDOT, on the date of taking, classified the Morales as displaced, and we're going to get to this definition, but it's very important. The definition that TxDOT used to classify the Morales as displaced on the date of taking is the following. The partial acquisition renders the remainder unsuitable for continued occupancy. The state acknowledges that that classification by TxDOT for the Morales as displaced was based upon the work of the state's own experts. And in a partial takings case, the question is asked in every case, what is the impact of the taking on the remainder property? The state's hired experts at trial essentially said the impact of the state's taking on the Morales property was very minimal, if any. The Morales strongly disagreed. The Morales position was the impact of the state's taking dramatically, negatively hurt their property. The jury had every right to know that from May 2012 through November 2013, and importantly, on the date of taking, June 2013, TxDOT classified the Morales as displaced, and that classification was based on the determination by TxDOT, looking at the state's experts, not my side, the state's experts, that the partial acquisition rendered the remainder unsuitable for continued occupancy.
But that status was rescinded, and you didn't appeal that administratively or do anything about it. Once it was rescinded, how is that relevant to any issue that that jury is supposed to be deciding?
It was rescinded after the date of taking.
Okay.
And it was rescinded through the administrative process of, is my client entitled to what's called relocation benefits? Judge Gable, I want to be real clear. Judge Robeson excluded properly any evidence of the jury hearing the Morales were entitled to relocation benefits, so that's not a problem. But the relevancy is, I've got the state's expert testifying as to the remainder property and the impact of the taking on the date of taking and saying, essentially, the property's not hurt because of the state's taking.
Because they came up with a cure plan.
The state's expert did.
Your expert did as well, did they not?
My experts came up with cure plan that didn't restore functionality, the same level of functionality to the remainder as it had in the whole property scenario. But the issue is this, Justice Gabriel. The jury is absolutely entitled to know the state's taking inconsistent positions. The jury's entitled to know that through the expert testimony of the state during trial, the state is minimizing the impact of the taking on the remainder. Meanwhile, at the very same time, on the date of taking, I have TxDOT classifying the Morales as displaced through a finding that the acquisition renders the remainder no longer suitable for continued occupancy. Very important point. The jury had every right to find the state's land planning expert and the state's land plan not credible. And essentially, the jury did. The jury did not award the state's number. Once the jury finds the state's land plan not credible, the only basis for rescinding the Morales status as displaced was a result of the state's land plan. If the jury finds the state's land plan are not credible and that plan not workable, then essentially the Morales go back to the displaced status because the only thing that the state used to rescind that designation was a land plan that the jury found not credible. Two other things. The state argued to you there was no evidence in the record to support Kim Morale and David Bolton testifying to displaced and displaced valuation. I strongly disagree. The state's experts testified that Kim and Steve Morale were the very best experts and the only experts the state's land planner consulted with on the function and use of an auto collision repair facility like Action Collision. There's no question Kim Morale was an expert. Kim Morale, in the record, and I will quote it for you because the state just ignores this.
Excuse me. You're in Fort Worth now. We don't go after the other lawyers. You just argue your case and let him argue his case. And you don't have to tell us, and he wants you to ignore this. Just argue your case.
7 record 139 and 7 record 123. Kim Morrell actually says on the record that she considers the state's taking to render the property displaced, and she agrees with the TxDOT classification of them as displaced. As an expert witness, she has every basis to come up with that opinion. Once Kim is of the opinion that they are displaced by the taking, then David Bolton, her hired appraiser, in May of 2013, only 1 month before the date of taking, has done an appraisal coming up with a displaced compensation analysis.
He has the right to come up with an opinion, but it can't. It has to be based on something. It can't just be conjecture. And even your own expert says the best and highest use for this property remains as a collision repair shop, and that can be done. So that means they're not displaced, is it not?
Yes, with a but. I don't agree with you completely, Justice Gabriel, and here's why. We get into this court's opinion in the town of Little Elm Plaza case. The uncertainty as to what the town will ultimately require of this property was testified to by Bolton. And Bolton essentially said, along with other witnesses, we don't know what the town will ultimately require. In the Little Elm Plaza opinion, this court said that the witnesses on either side cannot testify to the ultimate result as what the town will do. They are only allowed to testify as to how the uncertainty that exists may affect market value. There was ample evidence in the record that there was still uncertainty on the data value of what the town will ultimately require to be done with the Morales remainder property.
And they weren't able to rebut that.
Well, and I promise to get to that, but that uncertainty Bolton addressed, and he said in the record, the Carson land plan, the one you are identifying, the Carson land plan is what Bolton did his non-displaced valuation number on, the $1,064,000. Bolton also said, if for whatever reason the town of Little Elm will not allow the Carson plan to be implemented, then the $1.262 million number would be appropriate. Bolton's trying to follow this court's instruction as to uncertainty and not saying the town will do X, and therefore because the town will do X, my compensation number is going to be this number. He's having to address the uncertainty that we didn't create, the state didn't create it. It's just the facts that existed in the case about the town of Little Elm not issuing a final opinion and issuing building permits until the condemnation case is concluded. Justice Gabriel, can I go to your issue about Brown and Lommer? You cannot do by inference what the Little Elm Plaza opinion says you cannot do directly. And what I mean by that is we were crystal clear at trial. Judge Robeson prohibited either side from stating this is what the town of Little Elm will ultimately require. We could say that we had gone through staff approval and this is what staff recommended, but that's different than saying this is what town will require. What the state proposed to do through the introduction of the Brown and Lommer testimony was do by inference what you couldn't do directly, which is to say this is what the town of Little Elm has ultimately done or not required for various properties that are not the Morales property, that have different issues as to each property, but the town either granted a variance or made this requirement on that property, and therefore you should assume the town will do the same thing for the Morales. Very importantly, both Lommer clearly, and I think Brown also, testified that what the town had done with relationship to other properties gave no insight or was not an indicator of what the town would do for the Morales property.
What about leaving the misrepresentation in the jury's mind that O'Connor, was that the name, didn't submit a plan to the city, and I believe the city attorney was going to testify that it was only the landowner that could?
I don't think that's right. Here's my recollection of that. Dusty McAfee was the town representative who testified. He testified that McAfee told the state's land planner he could submit his plan to the town for formal submission even without the Morales opinion, but the state chose not to do that. There was testimony that I think was read in a deposition from Lommer by the state, where the state absolutely had the opportunity to tell the jury Lommer's opinion is different. Lommer's opinion was you are not the property owner representative, therefore you, state land planner, could not submit to the town. So I don't think that there was any...
Wasn't in their bill of review and was denied admission by the trial court?
Judge, I remember almost the entire focus being upon these other properties and the result of what the town did on the other properties and the inference drawn, that's what they would do for the Morales property. I'm almost out of time and I want to get to one issue.
We'll give you more time.
Two things, waiver and we have a lot of waiver arguments in our briefing. I want to direct the court to what I think is the clearest example of waiver, and you will decide whether I'm right or I'm wrong.
If you please look at volume 4 of the record,
page 164-165, and this is on the displaced testimony. Judge Robeson is questioning the state's trial attorney at that point, Mr. Randy Hill, about this displaced evidence coming into the record, and twice, and I'm going to summarize because I'm out of time, Judge Robeson says, it seems to me to be fair for the Morales to be able to say the property will not function. This is just their opinion. In their opinion, after the take and after the reconfiguration of the building, based on all these design experts and Mr. Morales' opinion and his expertise, the property will not function because that's pretty much his opinion. Here's the important part. Mr. Hill, for the state, I would have no objection to that. Judge Robeson, you would not have objection to that? Mr. Hill, I would not. It's one thing to arguably not include in a written pretrial motion all the points you want to cover and try to expand that later on. It's something else to tell the trial court judge, I would have no objection to that, and then follow up when the judge expressly asked the question again and said, by the state's attorney, I would not. I would submit to this court, that's clear waiver.
Didn't it go a lot further than that, though? The testimony about the testimony that actually was offered? I mean, she gave one example, but didn't it go further than that?
The she being Judge Robeson? The testimony for displaced valuation included in general the following. The TxDOT classification of the Morales is displaced. Kim Morales, who testified she considered them to be displaced, and then followed up by Bolton, who testified as to the uncertainty and certainly supported his displaced valuation on compensation, the 1.262 number.
She's talking there about Ms. Morales' testimony.
On being displaced, on testifying about
not
displaced.
Not TxDOT's
I agree
status.
With you. Okay. I agree with you. This does not relate to the TxDOT definition of being displaced. But when the state says this is an in-rem proceeding, and therefore this is just a classification of people, it has nothing to do with the condemnation case, please look at the definition. The definition is tied to what's the impact of the taking on the property, and it's tied to the state's experts. And that's a determination made by TxDOT, essentially, in my opinion, an admission that was in place on the date of taking. One more thing, and I apologize. The state argued that the TxDOT classification of being displaced was essentially, and I want to use the word, displacee classification. The state, I think, now tries to make a Rule 403 argument that the prejudicial effect of that evidence outweighed any sort of relevancy that it had. If you will look at the pretrial briefing, the actual title of the state's motion is irrelevant evidence. The only argument made to Judge Robeson had to do with relevancy on testimony about the Morales being displaced. That clearly, in my opinion, was relevant to the disputed issue of what is the impact of the state's taking on the remainder property where we had dramatically divergent views. In summary, for 30 seconds, the state's appellate argument ask this court to ignore what we actually know the jury did. We know the jury returned the exact dollar amount of the non-displaced valuation, and that evidence is not challenged in the record. You would have to guess, sheerly speculate, that but for the displaced evidence coming in, the $1.262 million number, that was the probable cause of the jury returning $1,064,000. I think that requires a level of speculation not supported by this record. And under the abuse of discretion standard, I think it's a high standard to meet, even if the individual justices of the Court of Appeals are of a different opinion than Judge Robeson about whether that was admissible. The case law clearly is You should give deference to Judge Robeson and only overturn her evidentiary ruling if it's out without guidance of any guiding rules or principles, essentially arbitrary and capricious.
Okay, Donnie. Thank you. We appreciate
Thank you.
It. Seth, do you need more time?
Briefly, Donnie.
Take whatever time you need. If we think you're too long, we'll cut you off.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will try to be as brief as possible. The first point I want to make is that the judgment is just the starting point in harmless error review. The state does not have to show that but for the admission of this evidence, the jury would have come to a different result. I think, and by way of example, would be a good way to explain this. Let's take the other situation where the state introduced inadmissible evidence. For example, the fact that the jury award comes out of your tax dollars, courts have held that's excluded because it's appealing to the juror's self-interest. The state's valuation in this case was $122,000. Let's say the jury picked that, but throughout the trial, the state was able to say, this is your tax dollars, this is your tax dollars, this is your tax dollars. Well, that would be a verdict supported by evidence, heir's appraisal. However, that's still an improper verdict because of the taint of that irrelevant and highly prejudicial evidence that it's the juror's tax dollars. And that's what happened here. I would point the court to the Ruiz and Baker cases. Those are two cases where the Texas Supreme Court held that there was legally sufficient evidence to support a verdict, but still held that the admission of irrelevant and prejudicial evidence caused harmful error and reversed. Next point I want to make is going to the relevance of the Displacy classification. We are not making a Rule 403 argument. Rule 403 relates to otherwise relevant evidence that is inadmissible because it's highly prejudicial. We are arguing that this evidence is irrelevant, and what it was done was used solely to prejudice the jury against the state.
What about the statement, I would have no objection, or I have no objection?
Yes, Your Honor. Going to the waiver argument, the full context of that, I would ask the court to back up to about page, I think the waiver is identified on 164. 4R 164 to 165, starting back on roughly page 162, the Morales Trial Counsel asked the court for a formal ruling on the state's motion to exclude the relocation benefits and displacy evidence. A discussion then ensued as to what term the Morales could use to testify to their opinion. The trial court was stating how the Morales could testify. The state's trial counsel said he had no objection to the trial judge's choice of words. I think immediately after that no objection quote, the trial judge clarifies that, and I'm quoting, we're trying to work on how we're going to describe without using the terms wipeout, relocation. This isn't a waiver or withdrawing of the state's objections to the displaced valuation. It's just the state's trial counsel recognizing that the trial judge has already ruled this is admissible, and her characterization of how the Morales can state it, he doesn't have an objection with that. One definition of the Displacy classification that you've heard comes from TxDOT's manuals. I want to provide the definition from the Texas Administrative Code, which is a person lawfully present in the United States who, as a result of the acquisition of property for highway right-of-way purposes, is required to move from a dwelling, business, or farm. This definition clearly focuses on the person and not the property, and if you look at what the relocation benefits program does as a whole, this is clear. This is supplemental benefits for moving. It's a retroactive program. A landowner moves and then submits their moving expenses and other various supplements and gets paid. It's a separate pot of money. The trial court correctly ruled, and the Morales don't contest this, that the relocation benefits themselves would have been inadmissible. And I think Texas law is fairly clear on that issue. Then if that's inadmissible, how is a classification of people out of this separate administrative program relevant? It's not. Finally, the state doesn't have the burden to make the property function the same as it does after the acquisition. In fact, it's paying $364,000 in damages because it doesn't function. And that distinction is important here. Not functioning the same or not functioning as well is not the same as not functioning at all. Condemnation law is set up to provide damages for the reduced functionality from the state's acquisition. That's what it did here. Finally, I believe the amount of time that the Morales were classified as displacees is a red herring for the court. This was solely an administrative classification in a separate proceeding. Whether they were classified 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, or 18 months has no bearing on the state's trial position. The relocation agents are completely separate. They would not have been brought into trial otherwise. And their opinion is merely based on heirs appraisals, and the initial classification and revocation of that is completely consistent with the state's trial position. Finally, under Little Elm Plaza, the state is not introducing the testimony. I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Just finish your.
Thank you. We're not introducing it for a propensity argument. I would point the court to Pennside 11 in that opinion, where the court is looking at the Coble opinion and it's discussing things that made a landowner's testimony speculative. And there they said the fact that the landowner did not show that they wouldn't be able to receive a variance was one of the factors that made it speculative. So Starside 11, also the Hedden pipeline case is applicable there. Thank you for your time for these reasons.
All right. Thank you. You have a question?
No.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate your coming here to argue today. Your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business, and this court will be adjourned.
Court of Appeals from the Second District of Texas. Now stand adjourned.